glad the headlights are on now.
Okay, today is the 27th of Shvat. The 12th of February. I apologize for my tardiness. The Sutton tried to stop us from coming from one side, but we came from the other side. Road closure. Okay, we are studying the Sefer Olam, Olam Hamidos. We are on page Lamed Zion. Page Lamed Zion. In the section called Olam Shel Emes. We had this, we're in a section talking about how it's the small things that show the greatness of a person. In some ways it's easier to do a big thing. We tend to think of big things being harder, but consistent performance of small things actually shows a lot more about a person. And the last paragraph we read last time, was that people are impressed when they read a story about a great person who was willing and able to get involved in something small. You know, the great gadol who was nice to a child, as if that's surprising. And Rabbi Kestenbaum tells us very poignantly, he says, if you think the fact that a gadol batara was nice to a child is exceptional or out of character, you're missing the whole point of what makes a person a gadol, what makes them a great person.
What is a small thing and what is a big thing? To me, it's the Zelden Zach.
A big thing is when you're on stage in front of 500 people. A big thing is when you pulled off a major project. A small thing is smiled at someone, took out the garbage, changed the diaper.
But that's not a small thing.
Okay, well, you're already a level ahead. Rabbi Zelagevsky once told us when he was speaking on Rabbi Ruchim Levovitz's yard site, he said a fascinating thing about Musar. When Rabbi Ruchim would first present an idea, the Talmidim couldn't understand what he was saying. And then they'd work on it. And then as soon as they got it, they couldn't understand what's novel. He didn't say anything. First you can't understand it, and then as soon as you got it, like, we didn't learn anything. Well, he didn't say anything. Because once you understand it inside yourself, it's pashut. It's a dover pashut. You understand how man is supposed to be. So you're right. The small things are the big things. So let's take a look at the bottom of Lamed Zayin. Teva adam shi'asa kala lo la'asos adram she'inim chiyuvim. Mi la'asos adram she'machuyiv bohem. By coincidence, this came up at the supper table last night. A certain Steinberg child said it's not right. Kids who don't have to come to a certain day of school, but come anyway, and they're great, so they get more credit or more raffle. They always win the raffle because they get more tickets. But the kids who have to come, that's harder. Chazal say, Godol Hamatsuva Osemi Misha in Hamatsuva. So I praised this point because it actually is reflective of what Chazal say. It's easier to do something that we're not commanded to do than that which is obligatory. V'yesh litin lazeh shnei ta'amim. I didn't want to start up with the whole Indian, but I just like the idea. You can give two reasons for this. Aleph sheteva ha'adam she'ena rotza lios kofuf lasos ezedavr. One is a person doesn't like to be subjugated, doesn't like to be bound. I'll do something as long as I have the freedom to choose what I want to do. But as soon as we're kofuf, which means we are, literally means bent over, but it means we're subjugated by something, I must do this, or then I'm not doing it. That is the nature of man. There's some beautiful insights from Bali Musa about this. I happen to recall Rav Avram Grodzinski, who is the Torah of Avram. He was the brother-in-law of Yaakov Kamenetsky, but he predeceased him by about 40 years. He was killed in the Holocaust, or died in the Holocaust. He was the mashgiach of the Slabodka Yeshiva. He had a very tragic and difficult life, but he has a beautiful Musa sefer called Torah of Avram, which I have at home. He has a number of shmuzin about how the main Yetzirah is, I'm free, you're not telling me what to do. He talks about the Chazal, that Chazal described that if a baby had a Yetzirah, it would rip its way from the womb. And he said, why? What's the baby missing? You know, there's climate control, there's free food, like what exactly? And the idea is, I don't want to go where she wants me to go. the Yetzirah primarily is, I'm free, I don't have to listen to you. So that is why when something is obligatory, it's what you must do, people have a hard time with it. Ubeis, sheyesh lo sipuk yoser basiyas davar she'eino chayiv la'asos, shechoshev sheze yokar v'nechmet. He has more, sipuk is like let's say, enjoyments or satisfaction is the right word. He has more satisfaction from doing something that he's not obligated to do because it's viewed as something valued and treasured. Wow, you did that? That's so nice. You didn't have to do that. Wow, that's so nice. Aval lasus masha mechuyev ena yakar kol kach ba'ena. But to do what he has to do is not so precious. That's just, that's regular run-of-the-mill obligations.
Isn't that the whole sublime nature of Torah, that we do what the Torah tells us to do?
Right, but people have more of a yetzahara not to. We like to do things that are special. When I'm just doing what I have to do, my yetzahara sort of fights back. If you're above that yetzahara, then you have to hang up.
I'm kidding.
Avol ha'emesu lehepech. The truth is the opposite. Gadol ha'matzuva va'osam mishayin ha'matzuva. The greatest is the one who is commanded. There's also a deeper idea that when Hashem gives a mitzvah, at least to Klal Yisrael, he's giving the sustaining of the world over into our hands. The reason why there's greater reward for doing the mitzvos, the commandments, is because they're not just commandments. In Lo Brisi Yomim V'Layla Chukot Shemayim V'Artzos, Hashem gives a mitzvah to Klal Yisrael saying, here, I'm giving you the reins, I'm giving you the keys, I'm giving you the system, keep it going. So you're doing what's necessary. If you do nice things, but they're all add-ons, they're not obligatory, you're not sustaining the world.
Yeah. Isn't it also related to the Ratzon Hashem? Right, that the whole idea of putting your Ratzon into aligning it with Hashem's.
Right. No, there can be things that are Ratzon Hashem, but they're hiddur mitzvah. They're nice add-ons, and I feel very good when I do them. But when Hashem says these are...
it's a direct mitzvah, so that's pretty clear. This is the
right
zone
right.
of Hashem.
That's the meat and potatoes of the olam.
Yeah.
That's the core. That's exactly right. In Judaism, by the way, generally, the more important things are the more basic things. Like, for example, in davening, the things you say every day are more important than the things you add on special occasions. If you come late to shul and you want to catch up and it's Shabbos, the first things that we actually would eliminate are the additional chapters of Tehillim. You might think, I wrote Shabbos, let me say the Shabbos chapters and I'll skip all the weekday. The halacha is actually the opposite. Because the basics, I mean, just like water is the most available in the world, but it's also the most precious. You don't need kiwi, strawberry, snapple, but you need water. So the things that are most available, more seriously, you don't need precious gems, you do need basic sustenance and hydration. The things that are most necessary are most available. And that's the way things are in our Avodas Hashem as well. He gives an example, page Lamech Ches, first full paragraph. Kama anoshim tarmim kesef l'tzedakah. Welcome. How are you?
Baruch
haba. Yeah.
Welcome
good to see
back.
You. Welcome back.
Just came back yesterday.
Okay.
Well, so I still think it's Wednesday and I'm in Rome.
Okay. Well,
because I changed planes. Right. Actually, Madrid.
Okay. Wow. Women in Rome. Kama anoshim tarmim kesef l'tzedakah. Many people will pledge money to tzedakah v'adayin l'shulmu chobosem ha'prati, but they haven't paid their personal obligations. So the nice additional thing, but the things he owes, he won't pay. But amnam aleinu l'hakir shekodem kol tzrichim lasos masha mutal aleinu. What we have to recognize is, before anything else, we have to do what's mutal means cast, what's obligatory upon us. V'halavai shekol echad yashlam es chovaso ba'olamo. Halavai, that each person would do what he's obligated in this world. Just came into my mind, it happens to be an interesting perspective that's presented in a tshuva by Rav Moshe Feinstein, actually to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, about Rabbeinu Tam Tfilin. There's a tshuva written in the early years in America. Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam have a machlokas, what the order of the parashas in the Tfilin are. The halacha follows Rashi, but it says in Shulchan Aruch, Yirei Shemayim should wear both. Some hold that's only if you're a person who's famous for being a very righteous person. Others hold nowadays when so many people do it, you don't have to be that righteous to do it, which many Sfarim do, many Hasidim do it. Rav Moshe writes in that tshuva why he wasn't wearing the Rabbeinu Tam tefillin, and Minhag Chabad certainly is to wear Rabbeinu Tam tefillin. He said, because Rashi tefillin I must wear. He said, this is only relevant at that point in America, things have changed, thank God, but he said, I haven't really found quality safros that I'm so happy with, the quality of the writing. So for a mitzvah that I must do, I do it anyway, I do it to the best of my ability. But if I'm going to do something that's considered a hiddur, it's considered something nice, I'm only going to do it if I can do it in a nice way. To do it in a way that I don't feel comfortable with. Again, it's not relevant to the whole machlokes of Rashi Ben Tam, but it presents a certain hashkafa in that particular instance. If I'm doing something that's supposed to be, you know, extra fancy, I'm going to do it only if it looks like it. If I'm doing what I must do, you must do it. If the paper is due, you're going to get a C, but give in the paper. But if you're doing something for extra credit, don't do something lousy. Yeah.
Is this talking about the script itself, or about people who are commenting on whether he should or shouldn't do Tam?
He was talking about the quality of the writing. It doesn't have to do with the machlokas itself. Okay. At that point in time, I think it was Jew in the 40s, the 50s.
We don't understand the difference between the two Tehillim, I don't think. I don't think
you don't have to. If you're looking at somebody's Shel Rosh, there are four compartments there.
Okay.
In Rashi Tefillin, they're in the order they appear in the Torah. Two from Parshas Bo, one from Voschan, one from Ikar.
Okay.
In Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin, these two are reversed.
Why?
The same thing. Because it depends how you read a Gemara.
Okay.
It's based on things in the Zohar and other things, but also in the Shalyad, it's one long piece of parchment. And in Rashi, so they're written next to each other. 1, 2, 3, 4. In Rabbeinu Tam, it's written 1, 2, 4, 3. And the way they're placed, actually, the order they write them is still in order. He writes 1, 2, skips a space, writes number 3, and then he writes number 4.
It's a machlokas.
Old machlokas. It really predates Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. It's a fascinating thing. It's not for now. It has to do with Olam Hazeh and the Emosa Mashiach, and that's as much Kabbalah.
But the original way would be the Rashi way, right? That would be
We don't know.
I have a commercial break here. One of my neighbors came and said that there is a parking restriction that says from 8 to 3 you shouldn't park on the far side where the new construction is. I have yet to see anybody get ticketed. It's completely up to you.
You're saying we should not park there?
Well, I think she's saying that there were cones that say don't park, but...
We're on the circle.
And I mean, if you move it to the other side, park in my driveway, or just leave it. I don't think anything's going to happen.
I figure I have a handicap sign. I'm not going to be here all that long. By the time they ticket me, I'll be gone.
It's to what you want to do.
Those who are parked by the houses are good.
I think so. I don't know. I have to really pay attention to
If you're in Boca, you're fine. Even up is parked. Okay. So he says the first thing is to discharge our obligations. Then we can do other things. He's coming at it from the realm of MS. It's not truthful. I'm all about all the extra things, but what about the things that I must do? There are people who run to do chesed, but there are people in their house are abandoned. What about the needs at home? Better for a person to take care of, you know, before you save the world, take out the garbage. That's right. If you can do both, that's wonderful. We have to be very careful with the simple things, the basic things that are incumbent upon us, and not to ignore them or to look away from them. He now gives an example. I don't know if I'm going to read the whole thing in the Hebrew, but he gives an example. You get a wedding invitation. Somebody bothers to send an invitation. He may have even put a return card with a stamp. And people are lazy about responding. Sometimes they forget. Now, in fairness, I'm feeling a little... in fairness, sometimes it's not clear on the schedule whether I can make it or not yet. And then it falls under the stack of things in the mail. But we accept the mussar from... we should be more sensitive. It ends up costing people money and time and aggravation.
That's the right thing to do. It's Derek Harris.
Right. Right.
And when I was in Israel, I have to say, I found that Israeli people, religious or not religious, we are wonderful people. Everybody was so kind, secular and non-religious, didn't matter. We really don't realize what a good, when we're in our own land, we are really a wonderful, we're light to the nations, really. We're wonderful people who are so nice to me.
You can see a lot of chesed and unity in Israel. The news always presents the other side of the coin, but actually you can see
that's what sells.
Beautiful things. Yeah.
That's what sells. Goodness doesn't sell.
Yeah. So Baruch Hashem. Good. It's good to have some good news also. bottom paragraph, V'chein harbif pa'amim. By the way, the minhag in Israel is not to respond to invitations. If you ever make a simple, don't expect anybody to respond. Just guesstimate how many people are coming. But as Chava said, they're nice about everything else. If you ever make a simple in Israel, you just guesstimate. V'chein harbif pa'amim anashim evakshim eitanu ezedavar. And many times people borrow something from us, v'anushokim es bakashasam, and we forget the request. V'yesh lefamim anushalim es hachefetz alovim moment. Sometimes we borrow an object or we borrow money. In Hebrew, by the way, it's two different verbs, to borrow an object or borrow money. We have a malva and a lova for money, and a shoel for an object, and because it's a different concept. When you borrow a shovel, you have to give back that shovel. When you borrow $20, you have to give back $20 of cash value. It's not the same bill. That is why there is ribis, for the problem of interest. If I borrow $20 from you and I pay back $25, that's prohibited. If we make that up in advance, hey, I'll borrow $20, I'll pay you back $25, that is a Torah violation. However, if I borrow your $20 shovel and I pay you $5 plus the shovel back, that's called a rental, and it's absolutely permissible. You're allowed to rent an object. Yeah, you're not allowed to rent money. And the difference is that money is, it's called lahotzah. It's, you're not borrowing the thing, you're borrowing the value. If I lend you a shovel and I say, hey, I don't need the shovel back, but that's a $25 item, pay me $25, and then you pay me $30, that would be forbidden.
The value of the $20 goes down.
So that's the beginning of Perek HaZov. I can't get into the they're also all
about different currencies. Is it the value of the 20?
There are things with currencies. It's complicated. It's complicated.
Complicated.
We'll make that next week's subject. Okay. So Vahareza Gezel Mamish, it's literally theft. To borrow and not pay back is theft. Ode va'od, and further many other examples. Tein l'chacham v'yech kam od. It's a pasuk. Give to the wise person and he'll add. Yishma chacham v'yosef lechach. A chacham listens and adds teaching, meaning he's giving a few examples. We can think of others. But this is all about being truthful. V'chein b'nyad mein adam l'makom. And similarly in matters between man and God. So these are all, you know, interpersonal matters. Now even in my own personal obligations, Darshu Chazal al-Pasuk b'haya ekev tishma'un. Our sages make a homiletic interpretation on the Pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Ekev. Ekev in simple translation means like because or on account of. But Ekev also means the heel. Like Yaakov, the name Yaakov, he's holding the heel of Esau. So if you will listen to the light mitzvahs that other people tend to step on with their heel. There's a similar drash as a pasuk in Tehillim. Avon akeva yisubeni. The sins of my heel will encircle me. What it means is all the things I didn't take seriously. That avera I wouldn't do. That avera I wouldn't do. But all the little things that nobody pays any heed to, but they build up and they build up. And they become a big problem. So the Torah is saying, it will be, if you listen to the heel, you'll be obedient of the heel. What's the heel? The sins that people step on, they just don't take them seriously. You have to be careful with every halacha. Every matter of the Torah is obligatory upon us. Be careful with a light mitzvah, like a serious one, because you don't know the schar of mitzvahs. Beharbe anashim ma'od, makpidim al hahidurim, al rachman al atzlan, misalmim mehachiyuvim. There are many people who are very strict about the hider, the thing that's just an add-on. It's an additional way of beautifying a mitzvah, doing something special. But unfortunately, they ignore or look away from the things that are obligatory. It's like, you know, the Kutzker. Chet is also the gematria chet. That was the Kutzker's line about the minhag not to eat nuts on Rosh Hashanah. So the Ramah records in Shulchan Aruch because the gematria of egos is chet. So the Kutzker used to point out Rosh Hashanah, chet is oich begematria chet. A sin is also. Very strict about it, you know, I won't.
The nuts.
You know, you serve nuts, what's the matter with you? You don't eat nuts on Rosh Hashanah. Like, okay.
They just humiliated somebody, right?
Right, you know, like, right, like, I think the Shagasari, when he came to one of his, I don't know if it was in Metz, or when he came to a rabbinic post, they had the pinkas, the list of minhagim of the community, so at the end he wrote down the answer, it's a difference. It's also a nice minhag, you know. Okay, next, Leos Yachid, to be individual. Once Rabbi Soloveitchik said that we have a mitzvah of going in the ways of Hashem, halachta b'drachov, and Chazal give a number of examples. Hashem is kind, be kind. Hashem is favorable, be favorable. But he also said, Hashem is unique. Man cannot be unique like Hashem, but man can't be anything like Hashem, but reflective of God's uniqueness is for a person to live up to the uniqueness that Hashem put in each person. I'm trying to just be a copy of someone else, and not being, be yourself shouldn't be a false way of, you know, well, I can't improve it. Be your best self, but be yourself. It's something that Bali Musa emphasized a lot. It's recorded in Svarim that when Rucham Levavitz, the great Mira Mashkiach, visited the Alter Slabodka, he was yelling at him for a week that he's too strong in his pedagogy, in his character, that he was making little puppets of himself in his Bali Musa, and he wasn't allowing the Talmidim to become who they were. But I believe son of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, as a bacher, heard this scream. He said, if I ever yelled at one Talmud in my yeshiva the way he yelled at him, we'd have no students left. And I believe the teaching was very successful. I don't know, to even think of a criticism of Rabbi Rucham Levavitz, but Rabbi Rucham Levavitz made many different Talmidim who were very different. So he certainly understood that concept. But maybe early on, the Alter felt that he was so charismatic and so strong. Sometimes you have it that Talmidim sort of imitate, become like the Rebbe, even if it's not them. So he wants them to learn from him to be their best, but their best, not just be a copy of the Rebbe. So Lios Yochid. So here, under the realm of MS, Rabbi Kestenbaum talks about to be individual. He's not talking so much about choosing a particular path in Avodas Hashem, but a more basic idea. Be ready to be an individual as opposed to a herd mentality where you just follow the herd for, you know, mindlessly and for bad things. One of the bar mitzvahs in a shul many years ago, I cited the Yiddish saying, Lebedik a fish swim in unkaren storm, which means live fish swim upstream. Dead fish go down if you're alive. So I said, so it's your bar mitzvah, eat sushi, don't be sushi. But anyway. That's what he's talking about here. Anach nedarim ba'olam hazeh, olam hasheker. We live in this world, and it's a world of falsehood. Kol ha'olam rodfim achar kesef, v'kavod v'choshar min yitayv. The whole world's running after money and honor and other desires. Everything you read, there's so much going on behind it. What's written in the news, and you know, it's all motivated by all kinds of things. Like the pursuit of truth on any side is very elusive. A person who sees his fellow, his friend, running after the above, meaning money and other things, if the whole world's running after this, it must be important. They're all running after the others like a herd of sheep. What are they running after? Hevel v'rik, vanity, emptiness, dvarim she'ein b'hem mamish, things that have no reality. Things that have no significance, bein ba'olam hazeh, bein ba'olam haba, in this world or the next. Reb Nachman of Breslov has a parable. A guy goes into the center of town. He says to people, "What's in my hand?" He holds a fist, clenches. "What's in my hand?" He runs away. So they start running after him. Well, what's in his hand? And he jumps over a fence, and now more people are running after him. "What's in my hand? What's in my hand?" Then the whole town's running after him. And finally, he gets into an alleyway. His back doesn't know where to go. He says, "You know what's in my hand?"
Nothing.
And he said, "That's the Yetzirah." Ooh, so elusive and so such a mystique. Ooh, wonder what that is. And nothing there. Poof. As soon as you open up, there's nothing there. I'll call Echabus Bonin Lahakir Mahwa Emes Vayasher. Every person is to contemplate, recognize what's truth and straightness. Velolus Balbi Mashachaver Vosim. And not to be misspelled, to be impressed. It means to be affected. But like things may register with you, that you're moved by them. Again, I think largely the Sefer is written for young people, and certainly the risk of peer influence, it's relevant at any age, it's certainly among young people. If his friends would jump off the roof, would he jump too? You'll challenge, and you'll say, Chazal, al tefrush min hatzibur. Chazal say, you're supposed to be part of the group. For our Kos of Rabbeinu Yonah, Sham, look in Rabbeinu Yonah's commentary on Pirkei Avos. We don't have Rabbeinu Yonah's writings on every Masechet and Shas. We have it in a few places. One of the places where we have it is Pirkei Avos, and it's a great gift. This is in a tzibur that goes in a good way. So, you know, which mitzvah are they doing? How do they do it? Shouldn't be different from the tzibur. What's the mindset in the room? be like that. That's the concept. Yiskapsu lasas tova. Ach tzibur hanotel aderach ra'ah, but a tzibur that's inclined to a bad path. Umaseim mukulkalim. Their actions are twisted, not good. Ein roilus chaverimon. One should not align with them. Vaporish mehem areza meshubach. One who separates from them is praiseworthy. Famous words of the Rambam in the sixth paragraph of Hilchos Deos, where he writes people are drawn after their environment, and therefore you have to pick a good environment. If there is none, basically the Rambam says go live on a hilltop, be a hermit. Ula'olam tzarach adam livdok es ma'aseh chaverav ha'im yashar mim. He has to analyze the people around him, their actions straight. Lo'lo lechas acharein b'li hisbonenus. Not to follow them without any contemplation. Ela yachshuv im nochen hadav lasos kamos. You should think, is it proper to do like them? Kol echad tzarach lios yachid. Every person has to be an individual. Kamosha anulomdim minoach she'amad yachidi v'dar shal rishayim. Early on in the Torah, what are the first lessons? By the way, the first lesson in Shulchan Aruch, really. Shulchan Aruch was preceded by the Tur Shulchan Aruch. Rabbeinu Yaakov Bal HaTurim was the first one to divide halacha into Orach Chaim, Yeredei Echosh, and Mishpat Eben Ezer. What we call the Shulchan Aruch is just Rabbi Yosef Karo's sort of adaptation or development of that. But in the first chapter in the Torah, Shulchan Aruch, he cites the Mishnah, Have az kanomer, lasus tzon avicha shabashamayim, be brazen like a leopard to do the will of your Father in heaven. And he says what that means is if people are mocking or scoffing or don't approve of what you're doing, have the strength of character to stand up. And that's the first thing. Boss?
Pinchas.
By Pinchas, yeah. He's talking just doing mitzvahs. Sometimes it's not a popular thing. This is not the stylish mode of behavior.
Somebody's making a joke about something halakhic. You know,
yeah.
That's
yeah. Look, yeah, there are places in academia where the religion is synonymous for idiot. You know, it's like
opium of the masses.
Yeah, the opium of the masses. That's already a long time ago. And the world today, like, oh, I can't believe anybody today still thinks so. Yeah. And it's the premise that they operate with, and you're in an environment of people who are trained to think like that, it can be uncomfortable. But that's the first thing in the Torah Shulchan Aruch, and that's what he says here. Thereby he won't be drawn after them. He says that's what a real leader is. I'm skipping a little bit, but the bottom paragraph of Lama Tess is that leadership means a person who's willing to. You have to be willing to lead yourself, or you can lead other people. And that way he'll be strong enough not to be drawn after them. He'll have the gvura to decide for himself, turning the page. And he's not always looking, what does this one think and that one think? And a person who's always looking for approval from others is not fit to be a leader. He does write in the next paragraph, though, but it doesn't mean you should be an iconoclast. You know, there's some people... They're such individual thinkers that they go against what everybody else, including great chachamim, think should be done. That is already going too far. And you have to make sure it's with proper counsel and Das Torah and so on. And in the last paragraph of that section, we should think we're the greatest people in the generation, and we can decide, we can chart out a new path. And don't need anyone's approval. Not to go that far, but to be willing to be individual enough that if people are doing the wrong thing, the mindset of parts of society is the wrong thing, that we're strong enough to say, not my cup of tea. Continuing, the Kabbal Acharayus al Ma'aseinu. Part of MS is accepting responsibility for our actions. Ches. Motzinu sha'torim mita'eres chetam shel gedolei olam ba'ofen chomor. We find that the Torah, it means the whole Tanakh, depicts the sins of great people, Gedolei Olam, in a way that's very severe. Afal pishe be'emes chatu rak b'davar katan. Even though the sin was really minor. This is a recurring concept in Tanakh, that the poshut shat, the simple words of the psukim, presenting sometimes in very harsh terms, very coarse terms, when Chazal tells it was much more nuanced than that, it was much more subtle. Kosev ayigav Hashem es ha'amal asher osu es ha'egel asher osa Aharon. Hashem struck the people for the fact that they made the eagle that Aaron made. Aaron HaKohen made the eagle. Afal pi shelo asa Aaron ha'egel ba'atzmo. Aaron didn't make the eagle. Aaron was trying to resist them, and he was involved only very resignedly, and he was trying to buy time and so on, right? Ve'od matzina b'machiras Yosef. in the sale of Yosef. Shatar misaperes lanu sha'achem konu b'Yosef v'machru. So you read the story of Yosef. It's a classic example of where, yeah. In fact, I have something where Aaron Cutler wrote about teaching Tanakh with a proper hashkafa, and he uses Mechiras Yosef as an example. You're talking about the Shiftei Koh, whose names appear on the Choshen, who are the progenitors of Klal Yisrael. Avram Avinu wasn't Zocha, his issue entirely was Am Yisrael, because he had a Yishmael, and Yitzchak wasn't Zocha because he had Nesav. This is Yaakov Avinu, Mitoso Shlema, his issue is complete. And those are the sons of Yaakov, the Bnei Yisrael, which is what our nation is called. And then you read a story, they were jealous of their brothers, so they said, let's go kill them. It has to be much more nuanced than that. But the way the Torah writes it is, he was having dreams about being great, they were jealous, they said, let's go kill him. It's not explicit in the Torah anywhere that they had a Bezdin and what their concerns were and why they thought he was after them. And that they ruled that he was Chayiv Misa. It writes about the act of Reuven, which is really just that he got involved in Yaakov in his relationships with his wives, but it says the way the Torah presents it is as if it's a much coarser act. Chazal say anybody who says that Reuven sinned, meaning the way, literally the way the Torah presents it, is making a mistake. He's nothing but a person in error. Said the same thing about the sons of Eli. You read the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, doesn't look too good at all for the sons of Eli. And they're punished very severely, and the words of Hashem to Eli are very harsh, and the sons of Shmuel, and David HaMelech, he's referring to this incident with Bathsheba. Those are all presented in the Tanakh very harshly. So what are we supposed to take from this? The Sforno writes, for example, in the Torah, we just read it, it says, ayin tachas ayin, shein tachas shein, an eye for an eye. So Chazal says, doesn't mean an eye. Bezdin never pokes out the eye of somebody because he poked at somebody else's eye. He pays money.
Doesn't mean revenge.
Yeah, but you talk about it at the court level. The Vilna Gaon is a famous allusion. No problem. The Vilna Gaon is a famous thing. Ayin, you take the letters after ayin. Tachas, what's under an ayin is a samach. What's Hashanah. Under a yud is a chaf, and what's under a nun is a samach. You get kesef. The next letter after ayin is kesef, if you rearrange it. That's the Vilna Gaon's word. But the question is, so why does the Torah say it that way? If the Jewish approach is, if somebody pokes out an eye, to pay for it, why? So why write that? So I believe the Sforno says that what it means is, in terms of the feeling, it should be that bad. If I poked out somebody's eye, I really should lose my own eye. What a terrible, how could you? Think about what the person. We cannot have a justice system like that. Only Hashem can punish and reward at that level, knowing people's intentions and so on. Was it accidental? What to what degree? And so a human court can't punish like that. But in terms of the feeling of the perpetrator, at some level, it's like ayin tachas ayin. There's meaning to the basic pshat. So if in all these places, Chazal tell us the details of the story were much more nuanced. It was much more complicated that the sin was not as severe as that. So why does the Tanakh write it in such a harsh way? The Torah is teaching us that a person has to take absolute responsibility, which is very similar to what I just quoted from the Sforno. Lo levakish amas los, elo lehodos ala emes. Not to seek an amas as an excuse. Not to seek excuses, but to admit to the truth. In fact, that's the difference between David and Shaul. It's a beautiful piece, I think, in the Sefer Ikrim. One of the Rishonim, contrasting the way David reacts when Hashem tells him he sinned and the way Shaul reacts. Both are great men. Shaul was chosen by Hashem to be king of the Jewish people. But when he errs with Amalek, which we'll read in a few weeks, next Shabbos, when he erred, he had justifications. The people wanted it. I didn't really. He responds when Nasan comes to David HaMelech and says you sinned. He says Chatasi. Suddenly, like everything is turned around. He had thought he hadn't, and then he's shown that. But he has. There's no excuse given, and. Chazal said that's why David's tshuva was accepted and Shaul lost the malchus. We live in a generation where everybody exempts, it's not my fault. Everybody exempts himself from punishment with all kinds of excuses that are really untrue. First of all, I'm an extreme behaviorist psychologist, and I believe I have as much free will as an earthworm. So it's not my fault if I did that. That's just a series of instincts that developed through evolution over millions and trillions of years, and I never saw a conscience. There is no conscience, and if I did something wrong, it's just the way I am. That was facetious. Anyway, Osha said, "Machmas ruach shtus shaba ora, temporary insanity." Evolution didn't get that far yet, but there's a little bit of temporary insanity that I had. So I'm usually a moral guy, but that moment I wasn't. It wasn't my fault. Osha said, "Machmas hanhogas horav anshes svivaso." It's not nature; it's nurture. I was raised that way.
But they just say that it's a ruach shtus that enters someone's mind when they.
Right, but Chazal don't say that he's therefore exempt. It's not literal insanity. To sin is to engage in insane behavior. If I'm really rational, why would I do something that just brings fleeting joy when it brings long-term sorrow? So it's an insane calculation. It doesn't add up, but it's not insane to the degree that, well, therefore I'm literally what the Torah would call a shote, and therefore exempt. It's not really, it's a ruach shtus, it's a vestige of insanity, but we are held accountable for it. One of my own Rebbeim, Rav Moshe Meiselman, the Rosh Yeshiva Toras Moshe in Eretz Yisrael, used to give very strong shmuzim. They were very appropriate for boys at that point in the development. There's the famous Gemara about Elazar ben Dordaya, that he did terrible sins, and now he wanted to do tshuva, and he's asking this one, pray for me. He's asking the mountains and the hills to pray for him, and the moon and the stars, and then he finally, they all say, we can't help you, and he finally says, Ein hadavar talui ela bi, it's all dependent on me, and he falls over crying. He basically dies that way, but he was considered full tshuva. He's considered Rabbi Elazar ben Dordaya. He's considered like one of the Tanoim. Like a rabbi from the Mishnah, even though he had been a sinner a few minutes before, because of the intensity of his tshuva and the what the Bali Musar developed, and I heard a number of shmuzin on this theme, is it's responsibility, the full sense of responsibility. Stop blaming everybody else. It's the moment when a person says, I can do better. The steps of tshuva that we just speak about dryly are confession, regretting the past, and commitment to do better. It's not just commitment to do better, it's the recognition, I really can do better. If I'm able to say I really can do better, what I'm saying is my excuses are nothing. It's a sense of responsibility. All these things where people blame it on their surrounding, their upbringing, their nature, it's all the opposite of the Torah. Everybody has free will, and he has to fix himself. One thing can be much harder for person A and much easier for person B, and vice versa, and a different thing. But we believe in free will. That's why it's one of the articles of faith, to believe that there's reward and punishment is predicated on believing that we really do have free will. If a person thinks I'm not in control of myself, then I shouldn't be rewarded for doing something good, and I shouldn't be punished for doing bad. Uliskaber al Yitzro, and to overcome his Yitzhar, Vim Lav, and if not, Nechshav Lachot is considered a sinner. Vim Odom Nechshal, if he does stumble, Tzarech Lahodo Shechot, he has to admit that he sinned. Yehuda, you will be praised, but Yehuda also means to admit. Yehuda, your brothers will praise you or thank you, but the Kliyaka there writes, Lafisha Ata Yehuda, Hodisa B'masa Tamar Kaoros, Shem Yehuda, Alkein Mida Kenegan Mida Yoducha Achecha. Yehuda was the one who admitted. He did something wrong, and it was a shame in public. He admitted to it. Because you admitted your brother, Yodu Lecha al Malchus v'lo Yevoshu. Therefore, your brothers will admit to your being the king. It's exactly his humility and willingness to accept responsibility that made him greater, not less. Teva Adam Lishtam Milakal Achrayas al Machsholu. It's the nature of man to not accept responsibility for his stumblings. Rak Lahashim Kol Ba Yosef al Achayim. Asham means guilt, to ascribe guilt of all of his problems on others. It's funny. It's an insight into the nature of man that he points out. Adam niskal be'ezadav. A person encounters something, like he stubs his toe. Miad beli his bonus yomer misam davar zepo. Who put this here? Sometimes there's a spouse name attached, whatever.
Right? We can see growth, though, in Yehuda. He's an adult. In other words, so he changes ways. People say, look, I'm too old to change.
Right.
I've been this way all my life.
Right. Right.
You know, I mean, he was changed as an adult.
That's
I mean,
right, yeah. If I lose something, who stole it? Who took it? Oh, I misplaced it. In most cases, he probably was the cause. We have to train ourselves not to conduct ourselves this way. It's funny, it seems like a silly thing, but it really is indicative. If my first reaction is, you know, whenever something bad happens, like, who caused this, you know? It's then something isn't not right. V'isim Masechah Shabbos. You have a story in Masechah Shabbos. Parasa Shorolozer Ben Azariah Haisei Yotza Bertzua Sheben Kanah Shelo Bertzon Chachamim. The cow of Shorolozer Ben Azariah went out carrying some. There's whole discussions in Halacha about what your animal is allowed to carry for you. V'amrusham Lo Shelo Haisei El Shel Shchinasu Haisei Mitoch Shelo Micha Ba Nikres Al Shemo. The way the Gemara says it is that it was his cow, and the actuality was it wasn't his cow, it was his neighbor's cow. But because he could have corrected it, and he didn't, so he was, it's called his. V'ramar o'cham kol mi she'efshar limchus l'anshe besa v'lamicha nitfas l'anshe besa v'anshe iro nitfas l'anshe iro v'chola olam kulo nitfas l'kol olam kulo. We do have a halacha, the Rama records it in Shulchan Aruch, that a person who has the ability to give corrective criticism and doesn't do so will be held accountable for the behavior that isn't corrected, be it for his family, his city, the world. By the way, we do also have tshuvos. I mean, that's a halachic concept. So the Mahari Vayal, Rav Yaakov Vayal, who lived a long time ago, he's like a late Rishon, already wrote a tshuva. So why don't we go around protesting? I should go out in the street, you know, on Shabbos. And I'll go on Montgomery. And so there are reasons why in halacha we don't go that far, that basically our musar won't be heeded. But the idea, certainly there are people, there are times in life when a person, he or she would really stop and think, say, I could probably correct this. The person would listen to me and actually would be thankful. But if we just look away, I'm too busy, I'm moving on to the next
thing. It's not just correcting the behavior, it's correcting the perception.
It could be perception, behavior, something. You know, you look at something and say, can I fix this? Can I help this person get it right? Sometimes the answer is no. Okay. Which we have, in which case you don't say anything, which we have to be realistic with as well. We're responsible for others too. If we could give constructive criticism and teach them the right path. And he's putting that under emes also. Primarily I think of emes in my own behavior, am I consistent? But Torah is not about just oneself. It's about arevus and responsibility. So he says in the bottom paragraph, therefore, if a person doesn't complete himself, aside from the fact that he'll be responsible for himself, he doesn't work on himself, so his own behavior, but now, because I didn't work on myself, I'm responsible for the fact that I wasn't a proper guide for those around me or those in my charge. So he says that, therefore, turns out, I'm summarizing a little bit so we can move it more quickly, but that what a poor person chooses is not just for himself, it affects his children. It could affect grandchildren, it could affect other people. I'll read the last four lines on page Memalef. HaTorah HaRicha Sof Parshas VaYishlach LaTaras Mishpachas Esav. The Torah goes a great length in the Parshas VaYishlach to give us the generations of the family of Esav, Aluf Teman, Aluf Omer. Aluf is a term for like a chief. And by the way, it comes from a word Aleph, meaning to teach. A person who's able to teach others, he's the chief. V'Psukim Tzoakim Elena. These Psukim cry out to us. Look at the great numbers and the greatness of this family. These are people with potential greatness. The whole thing was lost. Nothing great became of these people. Who are the great grandchildren of the grandchildren of Yaakov Avinu? Why? Because the head of the family, the patriarch of the family, was Esav, and he was a Rasha. Such an interesting way to look at that. Yes, yeah, so and we look at sections, all right, the Torah's giving us genealogy, there must be a reason, it's the Holy Torah, but I don't know why it was, you know. He's saying, look at that, look at all these people, it could have been something. Because I'll say about Esav himself, he's described as Yisrael Mumer. The Yisrael, the Jew, he could have been, but he went on with Mumer.
But it's saying also that it's not like the previous thing, they're not blaming Esav. and in the sense of pointing it out, but that just as Asa, what they saw in him was not that Esav was bad, but that, no, what they saw were Esav's bad ways, and that's what they continued, so right. Nothing became of them. It's not like, oh, he had three generations, and they were all great guys, but no. They were punished because of what Esav did. They were punished because what he did was so bad that they continued to do
right.
it, or they
right.
learned it from him. He didn't correct himself, so they didn't
right.
follow the generations.
Which is frightening. I mean, it can be a very positive thing, it can be a very negative thing. So he says on the next page, it could have been Harav HaGaon Tema, not Aluf Tema, but it could have been great people. It could have been a Mishpacha Shel Teferes HaKadosh. Again, so in any individual case, very hard to know, but basically we impact more than we realize. So let's do a little more here. The next section is to be willing to accept the tochacha, the rebuke of somebody else. If somebody gives a criticism, if he rebukes him, right? Shouldn't exonerate himself before the person even finishes talking. No, you don't understand. This and this happened. Like we get defensive. He should listen carefully to his words. It could be, even if it's not true, maybe his perception is inaccurate. He doesn't know something about my circumstance. He's criticizing me for something that's not actually correct, but it's worth listening to, because there's some truth in what he's saying anyway. The reason why a person doesn't want to listen to somebody else's rebuke, we want to believe we're perfect, I'm complete. I want him to know that I'm perfect. Somebody's criticizing me. There's a terrible thing going on here. He thinks I'm not perfect, and he's trying to make me think that also. That's awful. Got to set him straight and set myself straight. The person has to look at himself honestly and contemplate and realize that for sure he's not shalem to the nth degree. And every person has many shortcomings that should be fixed. So why should I be in this mode of wanting to defend? No, I'm perfect. Right, rather here. Let's hear what's wrong. He should remember his purpose. That was the beginning of the Sefer. We quoted from the Vilna Gaon, is to fix himself before Hashem. Better to fix myself for Hashem than to exculpate myself in front of people. Right? Better to hear the criticism. We should realize that Musar is for our benefit. We hear our shortcomings, and then we know what to fix. Now, he cites a story here. It's interesting. He cites it as a story with the Imre Emes and his father, the Sfas Emes. I have seen this story recorded as involving the Sfas Emes and his grandfather, the Chiddush HaRim.
Okay.
This is the Gerer dynasty. The Chiddush HaRim was the great Gerer Rebbe. He had a son who didn't have a number, should be lost, but he had one son who didn't live that long, but his son's son was the Sfas Emes. The Sfas Emes was mostly trained by his grandfather. So the Imre Emes was his son. Rav Avad Yosef cites this story. And he has a beautiful sefer on Pirkei Avos called Anaf Eitz Avos. So on the what they call the 48 Ways of Wisdom, the Memchas Dvarim Shatar Niknes Behem, one of the traits that makes a person acquire Torah is being willing to accept Tochacha. So on that Mishnah, he cites this story. I'll say it the way he recorded it is that the Sfas Emes, when, I don't know if he was late to something or something happened, and his grandfather was rebuking him. His grandfather was really rebuking him, and then accepted. And the grandfather came to him later. The Chiddushim came to him, said, "Why'd you let me rebuke you? I found out afterward you were up all night. That's why you were late." And he said, "I should pass up the opportunity for such precious divrei musar." It's funny. Rav Avadya there does tell a story about the Imre Emes right afterwards. The Imre Emes was also a great, great man. So the Imre Emes, Sfas Emes' son, said that once a person gave him tochacha, really just went right through. It was absolute tochacha, and that was a person came over to him once. A person was online to ask him to daven for his daughter. the ambulance was coming through, and the person tried to stop the Rebbe, and the Rebbe said, please, I don't even have a second now. I'm under tremendous pressure. And the man said, I have 20 years to deal with my daughter, and you can't give me a second.
Wow.
And he stopped. And apparently he told us over. It was... but anyway, that's the story he tells. Whoever it was one of the Ger Rebbes. You look at the last line on page Membeis. V'chi afsid ha'izdamnus l'shmo tochachas avi. Should I lose the opportunity to hear? It's a beautiful story to tell because that's the theme he's talking about. It's not about justifying I was right or I wasn't right. Tochachas there is a gift. So the Sfas would happily listen to his grandfather. It also indicates a strength of character. Why are we quick to justify? It's not just that we like the idea of thinking we're shalom. I want to justify because I'm not strong enough to be able to say I'm not shalom. The Sfas Emes was perfectly comfortable with himself. You have to be confident in yourself to be willing to be self-critical. I think ultimately, if we're not willing to be self-critical, it's because we're insecure. If I'm really secure, no, you're a good person. You still have shortcomings. If I feel it's okay to have shortcomings, then I'm willing to listen to the Musa. So it's something to think about. When a tochacha opportunity arises, that we should be willing to listen to it. The final paragraph, top of Mem Gimel, this will end.
About that? Sorry, was that final paragraph? So sometimes we can take tochacha from someone, but not from another. So what's that all about?
Well, it could be a couple of things. Chazal say that we're talking their time that we've lost the ability to give tochacha because he'll say. Chazal used an expression. He'll say, "Take the little toothpick that was caught in your tooth," and he'll say, "Take the beam that's caught in your head." It means like you're criticizing me about this. You're like, you know. So Chazal do say, "Noyim hadvar mayotzim epiosei." Things are pleasant when they come from the person who does it. Very often, the power of a musar shmuz is the personality you're listening to. I could say the same words that Chaim Shmulevitz said, but it's the personage that you're listening to. So, I can hear the criticism from anybody, but the power of it will come from somebody who represents it. I should have the strength of character to be able to listen to a hypocrite tell me what a lousy guy I am, and just listen to what a lousy guy I am, and not that he's not the one to be talking. But the human nature is it doesn't come out strong. The power of a real Musar Shmuz is the person who's speaking. Sometimes it can be a great, he's saying simple things, but it's just the beauty of the person who's speaking. So I think sometimes that's part of it, and sometimes it's something personal. It's very hard to listen to this person. There can be a relationship there. I don't want this person to be telling me that I'm not perfect, because I have history with this person, and I don't like to hear it from him or from her or from whoever.
And then what you do is a challenge to differentiate MS, since this is all about MS too. It's like you could, on the one hand you want to say, two exact same statements, but this comes from a very chashuv person, and this doesn't. So, what do you? How do you know truth? That's tochacha negativity. In the world of shidduchim, somebody recommends a shidduch. Oh, I'm sure that's very interesting. Somebody else recommends the same shidduch. Oh, I'm going to look into that. Right. Because you're giving credit. What? Where does truth lie? How do we learn what to believe and who do we? It's very nuanced.
It carries the weight of the person saying.
Yeah, from like a negative, but also in a positive, and objectively they may be the same, but we trust, which gives even more reason to be completely truthful. Who do you trust?
Yeah, the stories of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter being, he heard a line and he took it as Musar. But you have to have your ear attuned that way.
And be open, so that you can objectively.
Right. But if my ear isn't attuned to be listening for Musar, then only when a great person will say it, then maybe it'll resonate. But if somebody else. Rabbi Zalagovsky used to love to tell over that, I think it was the Yeshuas Yaakov, one of the great Rabbonim had a weak heart and. They told him not to go, and Dibna Magid was speaking. And the Magid spoke, people were moved, and he really got people's heart. So they told him, don't go, you're not in a good emotional state. When the Magid speaks, it's emotional, it's not good for you. He said, don't worry, it'll be fine. And the Magid just got up. Before they would speak, they'd kiss the parochas. A lot of people walk up and kiss the parochas, and the Magid got up and kissed the parochas, and he burst out in tears, and he was uncontrollable. I mean, what does that mean? I mean, it was the greatness of the Magid's character. He didn't have to say anything. that's a lot of what it is. So obviously that varies by the person, not the words being said.
I think if someone gives you tokuga, even if you think they might have ulterior motive, I think you need to think about it, because Hashem didn't let you hear that. You need to take what, there may not be all true, but there may be some evidence
right.
in there.
It's a madriga. It requires a level to be 100% right, but we have to bring ourselves to the level to be always ready to do that. It takes work. Yeah. Except the Musar. I'm going to try. Okay, we'll continue next week. Thank you very much.